This is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, Osama bin Laden speaks out, and Florida's top cop is caught name-calling. Joining us today from our New York Bureau, John McWhorter, Senior Fellow in Public Policy at the Manhattan Institute. Mary Frances Berry joins us. She's a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, and she joins us from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., and joining us via phone today from the Windy City, Roland Martin. He's executive editor of the Chicago Defender. All right, folks, welcome. We want to talk a little bit about this audio tape that we're hearing from Osama bin Laden this week, where he calls for a jihad in Darfur. Mr. bin Laden says, I call on the Mujahideen and their supporters in Sudan and the Arab Peninsula to prepare to wage a long-term war against the crusade in western Sudan. We should note that bin Laden resided in Sudan in the early 90s. And Mary Frances Berry, while people are suggesting that there is no direct link with bin Laden to those Arab militia involved in Darfur, that this, in fact, could inspire violence in the area.
Absolutely, and the issue is so complicated. Once we get over the fact that Osama bin Laden is still around and able to send tapes places and have us hear them and is not dead somewhere, once we get over that, all of us have been so focused, many of us, on trying to get something done about the genocide in Darfur and hoping that the UN peacekeepers would go in and things would get settled. Now we get this new factor in the mix, and it may very well be that if the UN peacekeepers do go in, that there may be more fighting and the Muslims may be inspired by this. Some of them who are now feeling rejected by all the political debate about the repression that has gone on there. So for those concerned about the genocide in Darfur, this is very bad news.
John McWhorter, here's what's interesting to me as we look at something we talked about yesterday, and I'm sure we'll continue to talk about as the prices go higher, and that is when we see the angst and the anger that Americans are now talking about in terms of fuel and gas prices and the question of the Middle East and how much involvement they have in these rising gas prices and the anger that we're starting to see from the West, we are in a terribly tenuous situation in terms of relations between the states and that region.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And what makes this complicated is that really it's race that comes into it at this point. Like, for example, here we have bin Laden showing in yet another way what a parochial person he is, in that he apparently doesn't care about the fact that there are black people who are being hurt in this war in the Sudan. And so in this case, we have to decide whether we want to alienate a Muslim government, which is doing something which we consider morally repellent, which is destroying black people, often because of simply their black skin. Basically, in Arabic, those people are being called the N-word while they're being killed. It's just the same thing as something like that here happening in the South 50 years ago. And so, yes, it is a very tenuous situation. Any sense of placating bin Laden has to be tempered with the fact that he's showing here that he's not interested in Islam. He's interested in Arabs, a much smaller category that happens to include himself. And based on our principles, the man has shown himself to be a bigot, just like Bull Connor. He doesn't care about black people, just like President Bush supposedly doesn't.
Roland?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's not necessarily an issue of race. It is still an issue of an Islamic government. And then you have in the South there, you also have mainly Christians. And so you do – this is also a religious war, and that's really what this boils down to. I mean, bin Laden is about religion, is about these Islamic states. I mean, keep in mind, he was highly critical of Saddam Hussein, saying that he was not a real Muslim. He was not fully practicing the religion. And so for him, this boils down to religion, and that's what this war has been about.
But it's don't forget that a great many of the people down there being killed are Muslim rather than Christian.
It's also about oil, according to bin Laden. He thinks that the reason why the West and the United States are now suddenly taking an interest is because of oil, and that our dependence on oil influences everything that happens when we relate to the Middle East and we relate to Sudan. That's absolutely true, whether or not – it's been so long that this has been going on in Darfur that we haven't done anything.
And I think, Mary, we lose sight. I think we lose sight, and that's why I raised it earlier. We're so myopic in our view of oil and fuel and the need when we look at the price that we when we drive by the gas station, but it's a much bigger issue than that in terms of just the tenuous nature of relationship and the one spark that could cause real problem in any area.
Almost everything that happens in international relations is somehow related and connected to our dependence on oil one way or the other, and which means that Americans should focus on that more and that we should figure out some way to not be so dependent.
Well, also, I think one of the issues, Ed, is that we have a continuing view, and granted, it's standard, that what is in the best interest of America should be in the best interest of everyone else. And that's what we are continually faced with. And so what we're finding is we're now finding countries who are repelling that, who are saying, you know what, guys, we don't need to deal with you. You got Hugo Chavez saying, oh, I don't have to sell oil to you. I can sell it to China. And so other countries, they recognize that we are weak. They recognize our weakness. This is like anybody else who knows how to push our button. And when it comes to the issue of oil, other countries have figured out this is how they can push our button, and they now can do business with other countries and still be able to be profitable. That's what is also going on here.
All right, let me turn our attention to the state of Florida, where race may again have raised its ugly head, the question of it, if you will. The head of the Florida Department of Law Enforcement resigned, Guy Tunnell. It is suggested that he, during a meeting with Bush representatives, suggested and likened Senator Barack Obama to terrorist leader bin Laden and the Reverend Jesse Jackson to outlaw Jesse James during a meeting with George Bush's agency heads on Tuesday. Obama and Jackson had been invited to participate in a march to bring attention to the death of a 14-year-old boy who, after an altercation with guards in a Panama City boot camp, died. Here's the interesting question here, John McWhorter. Is this someone who just was loose-lipped, or is this someone who felt comfortable with agency heads from the White House to even talk about this in this way?
He's just an idiot. I mean, the very fact that this is in the media and that this man would resign shows that we have made some progress in this country, in contrast to something like Russia, like you were just showing. But to be honest, I really don't see why when somebody of low intelligence who makes a very bad, inept little joke comes up with something like this, that we're supposed to scratch our chins and examine it and he's supposed to resign. I just going to pieces over some minor figure's bad joke, I think, makes us as Black American people with our history.
Well, first of all,
rather
Ed,
weak.
He should
keep his job. And I think I'm going
to
say one more thing. If we can't be made fun of at all, even by people who can't even make the point articulately, then it seems to me that we don't like ourselves very much.
There's more to the story,
John. The bottom line is this guy is the head of Florida's Department of Law Enforcement, and for him to make those kinds to compare a U.S. senator to Osama bin Laden.
It was a joke. He was making an inept little joke.
Hey, before you guys... Hey, wait a minute.
He's not on stage. This is a U.S. senator.
Roland, before you guys take off on just what he said about them, there's a context in this story. Apparently, this head of law enforcement has done a number of other things which led people to believe that he had views and might act in a way that would be prejudicial. He had apparently, in a court case involving closing down a black nightclub that whites neighbors didn't like when he was the sheriff, he took some actions that black people complained about as racist. Also, his relationships with one of the other sheriffs and emails that he had sent to him when he was a sheriff who was involved in some cases and involved in the beating of this young guy. So it wasn't just that he said that, sat there
right,
and said that, and some of his colleagues reported it, which is
right,
good.
Mary,
that
I completely
positive
agree.
But there was a context to the story.
Yes, those things should matter, and those things should be investigated. And if it turns out that those things have grounds behind them, then those are reasons for him to resign. What bothers me is that the little inept joke that he makes based on the sounds of these people's names ends up being the main thing that makes the media and that we end up
well,
discussing.
It makes the news, but I don't believe that Jeb Bush, having been some familiarity with him and with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement during the 2000 disenfranchisement of blacks during the 2000 election, I don't think that he would have had him resign unless there was something more to the story.
Here, Roland Martin, is, you know, the unanswerable question by all of us here who ponder what went on. And I raised it earlier. My concern is, and we don't know if he's just an idiot, as John McWhorter put it, or whether or not this breeds the contempt that we see behind closed doors, that these kinds of jokes go on with a wink and a nod. And as Mary Frances Berry said, at least someone in that room, a couple of people in that room, were brave enough to say after the fact, hey, this is inappropriate and we're going to report it. But one has to believe, whether we like to admit it or not, these kinds of jokes, winking and nod, with no Certainly. Black folk in the room, go on all the time.
We must assume that they do.
Ed, I can deal with ignorant people, but I have to recognize that when you are in a position of authority, when you, like this gentleman, when you are at a meeting with agency heads, that you will be respectful of a sitting member of Congress, a U.S. senator, as well as a minister like Reverend Jesse Jackson, who, like it or not, has done a lot for America. And so, and you're right. And so when you make this kind of comment, it's just a joke, you also begin to think about, well, how do you then take your view of these two individuals or African Americans when it comes to public policy? I mean, you still want people in positions of authority who have some sense of respect for individuals.
Mary, can you, in this instance, if we were to take away, as you aptly noted, the other issues that may have led to his resignation, if this had happened independently, can you apologize for something like that and say, hey, it was a lame joke, I tried to be funny, it wasn't, in our quote-unquote politically correct environment, could he have apologized and survived this?
Yes, there was a radio broadcaster, I think in Chicago or someplace I was recently, who had made some comment about race or about black folks. It was either Chicago or Detroit. And even the NAACP said after he apologized that he should not be fired from his job.
Yeah, the guy in St. Louis, talk show.
But a little different between a DJ and the head of
the head of the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. As I point out, I remember them from the 2000 election disenfranchisement. He's a very powerful guy. Mm-hmm. And so you want law enforcement to be handled in a way that appears not to be biased. So at the very least, if he had just said that and that was all, then I think the governor would have had to be in a position to get him some counseling, have him apologize, find out why he said it, do something other than just, you know, letting him get away with. But I'm not sure that he would absolutely have to be fired just for that one incident if that was all we knew.
All right. Let's turn our attention to a friend of yours, Mary Frances Berry, Bill Clinton. We are looking at now, and for the listeners who have not seen the picture, I'll try to describe it. Mr. and Mrs. Clinton unveiled their portraits, which are to be hung in the Smithsonian. These are not the White House portraits, but the Smithsonian portraits that will hang. And President Clinton has a very interesting pose, many say, hand on hip, jacket back, and young people might say that he struck a Mac Daddy pose along a fireplace there. Some people are questioning, Mary, whether or not this is appropriate, whether it's presidential enough, or whether this is just the continuation of the baby boomer president, Bill Clinton, just being a part of his generation. Is this much ado about nothing, those who will suggest that this is not presidential and not appropriate?
Oh, I think that it's part of Bill Clinton being Bill Clinton. And I think I've seen him, you know, stand around in that pose. A lot of us have. And it's very much him. And I don't think that there's anything inappropriate about it. He has on clothes. He's dressed and has on a tie. And he just simply has his hand. And it is sort of a Mac Daddy pose. But then Bill Clinton is sort of a Mac Daddy kind of guy in a way. And so I don't think that it's inappropriate. I think it's just part of him being him. And we wouldn't expect a formal portrait like, you know, George Washington or somebody like that. And so I'm amused by it and pleasantly surprised.
Here's what's interesting, Mary. The portrait that hangs in the White House is Bill Clinton, hand resting on the desk, other hand in his pocket, looking very relaxed. Right. Why do all these portraits have to be the same? Frankly, I'm going to tell you right now, if you go look at his portrait, you're probably going to know his portrait more than the rest of those guys. They're all going to be the same photos. They're going to be the same portraits. They're all the same. They stand there with this dead look, you know, on their faces, like, okay, what, we're in a mausoleum or something? And so yeah. I don't understand what's the big deal. It's a casual photo. get over it.
I would say that it's definitely true that it's time with Clinton to have that kind of portrait, because we know him so well based on the way the media is, based on the way boomer culture is, based on certain activities that we all know he was involved in. For all of his portraits to have him looking like he was made out of soap would be so incongruous today that it's time that his portrait started looking real. We can't go back to George Washington in terms of that.
I mean, what? I expect George W. Bush's portrait to be in a flight jacket or something.
Right.
Mary, here's the interesting point, though, and it's interesting to see George Bush and those who will come after, because you do see the struggle of politicians now who are of the baby boomer age to determine whether or not they want to project the cooler image, if you'll allow that, or the more tried, true, traditional, quote, presidential image. You do see many of them struggling with that. Al Gore was one who struggled with it a great deal.
Right. He struggled unsuccessfully. With it. John Kerry struggled with it unsuccessfully,
I
think.
Can't win with that today.
But I think that given the perspectives that people have today and how the culture has changed and how we've all changed in the nation and we moved on, this portrait of Bill Clinton is a sign of moving on. And so I think the presidents who come after him will have to move on, too.
All right. Roland Martin, John McWhorter, Mary Frances Berry, as always, very spirited, and we appreciate the time.
Thanks, Ed.
Thank you.
Thanks.